Today is October 23rd, 2014. This is episode number 278 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, Grand Poobah. Grand Poobah, that's what I am. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
Please, please tell me you wear a Fred Flintstone tunic thing with your Water Buffalo Lodge hat with the president on it.
Excuse me. That's the Royal Order of Water Buffalo.
My bad.
Darn tootin'.
I guess this explains why I never got the little crescent thing for my fez.
Exactly. Well, yeah.
That's not a fez. That's a shako.
It's a shako? Is that what I didn't actually realize that was called a shako.
Yeah, the big furry
yeah.
tube hat thing that marching yeah. bands wear. That's a shako.
I probably should know that. Nonetheless, you were gone for a week. Bob sat in. Last week after we had to throw away a show.
Yeah, you know how people talk about throwaway shows? Ours was literal.
Yes, little noise on the recording side on my end. It was kind of a shame, but it's good to have you back, and been a few things going on. Shall we jump into it?
Sure. What kind of things have been going on?
Oh, you know, nothing. Nothing much, but Apple
All right,
did
and that's
launch.
This week's Apple Con- oh wait,
no. We every time we have to talk about the things that we're going to talk about, then we do the outro. Intro, show, outro.
You're so linear.
I know, right? So Apple launched Apple Pay. Promised in September for October. October came along. Boom, Apple Pay.
Now, I think it's totally appropriate for me to say that before all of Apple Pay rolled out, and I was voicing some concerns, not because I felt that Apple Pay would be bad, but because I felt that with the resistance we've had in the United States towards changing our credit card payment system, just in general, that Apple would have a difficult time, or potentially have a difficult time, getting broad acceptance for their mobile payment system.
Right. You did, in fact, express that opinion.
And I think it's also totally appropriate and necessary for me to say that last night I finally had a chance to try out Apple Pay at my local grocery store.
Mm-hmm. And were you right? Is it doomed? Will it fail? Is Apple wasting its time? Will it never work?
I see doom and gloom here. I definitely see doom and gloom. However, really? It's for everyone else that hasn't already jumped on the bandwagon and beat Apple to this game.
Yeah, and even the people that did beat Apple to the game. That's everybody's problem. When anyone beats Apple to the game, they do it wrong because they don't know how to copy it. They don't know what to copy it.
True. And Apple Pay turned out to be so drop-dead simple. I mean, this is exactly what a smartphone-based mobile payment system should be. It is flat-out brilliant. I mean, all I had to do was hold my phone, not even awake. The phone. I was awake. The phone wasn't. I could have been asleep. I'd just gotten back from a full day travel. But anyhow.
Right.
It woke up my iPhone when I got it near the card reader. It knew what store I was in. It knew what my default credit card was, and it showed me my total and let me know what store I was going to be paying. I lay my thumb on the Touch ID button, and then it gives me a new screen saying that everything's paid and it's done. And the amount of time that it took for this to process, from beginning to end, is less than the amount of time it takes for me to get my hand in my pocket to pull my wallet out.
Nice.
I mean, it was so simple, and everyone was so excited about this. And this is where my change in attitude came in. It wasn't the simple part, which was awesome. It was the excitement that everyone else had. The other people in line that knew what this was or wanted to know what it was. The cashier who was really excited to see me try this out. And just this overall sense of this is so great that everyone had. And that is completely new, at least for me. Every time that I've been in a store that has a mobile payment system, a chip and pin, whatever, there not only is a lack of interest in using the system, but the store staff will actively discourage you from using it. And what I saw was a staff that was excited about it and wanted to use it, wanted to watch me use it, and then wanted to know how I felt about it.
Well, that's curious. What were they, Apple fans?
No, just a store employee. Matter of fact, the cashier that rang me up, she's like, well, you know, I wish I could use this myself, but I have my Android phone, so hopefully Google Pay will happen soon. And I'm like, okay, there you go. Google
2 years just ago.
Missed out.
2 years ago, Google Wallet.
Exactly. And she didn't even know there was anything for her to use on her Android phone.
I'm not given an Android device for my credit card. There is no way. This is not me being partisan here. This isn't even about me hating Google's business model of, you know, collecting all my personal data and my personal habits and my personal shopping and selling that information off to advertisers. This is about the security that is not inherent within Google. Within Android, I mean.
Right. It's okay. See, there's a big thing right there. If you don't have trust in the system, you're not going to use it. And I think there's a whole psychological thing where people are more likely to be trusting of Apple, at least right now, and the iPhone, than they are of other systems. And Google kind of has a stigma.
Yeah, and Android has a certain stigma too. It's, you know, all the malware in mobile is currently aimed at Android, and that's not likely to change. Now, jailbroken iPhones are also subject to various forms of malware and various attacks. But iOS is a lot more secure than Android, period. And in addition to that, you know, it's interesting. Tim Cook has talked about the fact that other mobile payment solutions are all trying to profit from your personal data. And Apple is not.
And I think that's a big thing right there.
It is. Now, Tim Cook said that he thinks that matters to people. And I'm not sure that that's true. It matters to some people, for sure.
It matters indirectly. And okay, so here's where I'm going with this. It matters indirectly because Google is using us as the product. And so anything that we do with our devices, including credit card transactions, to some degree is part of the product that Google is selling.
Yeah.
That in and of itself is generating a lack of trust or a level of distrust.
But only for some people, though. I'm in a tiny minority.
I know, but I think that when you get enough people that question whether or not they should be trusting Google or technology in general, that it just kind of snowballs. And so I think that there are a lot of people that are experiencing some level of distrust towards Android or Google. They don't know exactly what it is, and it's coming from all the zealots, people like us that are like, trust issue, privacy, blah. And I think that's going to be a big stumbling block for Android.
Yeah, I would imagine that it is. And I don't think that, I mean, Apple's ability to get all these banks at rollout, it was tremendous. Apple's decision to leave the banks in charge of the transactions was brilliant. And that's something that now that Apple has done it, everybody else will have to do it or not even be able to get out the door.
Yeah, and see, this is something that's going to put currency at a big disadvantage. Currency being the I'll call it the debit card style system mm-hmm. that Walmart and Best Buy are backing.
Yeah, that's the people behind that need to give up any delusions that they can compete with Apple with Apple Pay.
Well, okay, it gets worse because I just found out that one of the terms of conditions that you have as a currency partner.
And this is, by the way, this is C-U-R-R-E-N, capital C, currency.
Yes. If you're using currency, you cannot use any competing payment systems.
You mean if you're a retailer?
If you're a retailer, yes.
Yeah, that is idiotic. They're gonna lose. They're all gonna Google could end up doing something that works. It is possible that Google can go toe to toe with Apple in this. Microsoft, no. So it's conceivable that Google can go toe to toe. The end.
Sure. Yeah. There you go. The end. I think currency is a stillborn project.
Yeah,
it's still a year out, and with we're still relatively limited on where you can use your iPhone as your credit card.
We're not relatively limited. We're extremely limited.
All right, fair enough. We are extremely limited. However, even with that limitation, this has momentum because we finally have a system where we have retailers that are behind it.
Right. Retailers and banks. You know, banks are sending out messages to their people. You can use Apple Pay now.
Right.
Right? There's a lot of corporate momentum behind the system. And again, a big part of it is that Apple left the traditional infrastructure in place. So Apple is disrupting mobile payments, but they're not disrupting the traditional players while they're doing it. And that has resulted in the traditional players backing Apple's Apple Pay play.
That was impressive.
Thank you.
Well done.
And there's a lot that went into, you know, it's so funny. Apple has become so big, and I'm talking about big in terms of its sales. Apple is a company, while its sales dwarf Microsoft's, has a fraction of Microsoft's employees, even with all those retail employees. My point being that Apple has become this huge company with this incredibly simple product line. What Apple has done with Apple Pay would be a monumental achievement if anybody else had done it. Of course, no one else could do it because they're not Apple, but that's not the point. A lot went into making this happen. And Apple rolled it out as just, you know, just another service that we're doing. And, you know, again, if any other company had been able to do this, it would have been a really big deal.
And it is a really big deal, but Apple's being all nonchalant about it. Okay, yes. So here you go.
Yes.
Just exactly. Use it with your iPhone.
Now, all right, I want to go back to something. You said that the people there were interested in your experience.
They were.
Who was actually interested in your experience?
The cashier.
And the cashier who is an Android user.
Who's an Android user. And two people in line behind me.
So two customers, okay.
And I don't know what type of smartphones they were using, if any.
So were they like looking over your shoulder and kind of watching the whole thing?
Yeah. Yeah, as soon as I pulled my phone out, and it was like I was the center of attention because everyone wanted to see what this was and how it worked.
Right.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
But management didn't come over or anything like that.
No. Okay. No.
But
it was also busy enough that for a manager to come over probably wouldn't have been realistic.
Well, I was just looking for additional context. By the way, I moved my half of the studio across the street from a small train station.
So you have a really fun view.
If you're
a 5-year-old boy,
which I am, a 5-year-old boy. I have a fine view, trains. But with that comes a little noise. So like you might have just heard a train honking. It's just wanted to let you know what was going on this side of the studio glass.
You totally blew a perfect opportunity to tell people that either we were podcasting on the go from a train.
Yes, I could have done that.
Or that we've decided to become hobos.
You know, Jeff, I've taken up the hobo lifestyle.
No kidding. Yes. Heard it's really wonderful, footloose way to live.
It is. So anyway, I just wanted you to know what was going on there. So yes, the people were interested in what you're doing. It was all rather fast, and it turned you into a believer.
A single transaction, and because of the reaction that I got to what I did and the experience that I had processing the transaction, I think that you are right in your assessment that people, as customers, will be putting enough pressure onto retailers that those retailers will have to start adopting Apple Pay, regardless of whether or not they had planned on doing it at any point.
Well, on the positive side, you are batting 1,000.
That's sweet.
You have once again nailed your consistency with your predictions about the upcoming Apple products and services.
Or at least the ones we talk about.
At least the ones we talk about, right. Right. So, well, it's all rather interesting. Now, I did while you were out, I did a how-to piece on setting it up. Obviously, you set it up while you were out.
I did.
And that process was also very easy, right?
It was. Okay, for my initial card, which is the one that I have linked to my Apple ID.
Right, that was like...
It was done.
Done, yeah.
And then I had a second card that I added in, and I did the photograph, and it got everything perfect. And then when it gave me my authentication options, the only option I had was I had to call.
That's interesting. So there's actually a really... Now, we talked a little bit about this on TDO, again, in your absence. There's actually a wide variation of the ways that banks are handling this. So Amex wanted authentication. They didn't have a phone number for me, so they wanted it's a business card, right? So the phone number they have is not mine, and the only authentication option I had was email. I had three
interesting because my yes. Amex business card, it was by phone number, and I just tapped the number it had, went through the phone tree, and they're like, "Yep, no problem. You are active now. Enjoy using Apple Pay."
Interesting. That is interesting. So, and then I did three Citi cards, and none of them needed any confirmation. No two-party, no two-factor authentication at all.
Interesting.
And then a fourth Citi card on a business account that just wasn't. The city wasn't ready to have that card even be a part of Apple Pay at all. So four cards from city and two different situations.
Huh.
Yeah. So anyway, my point is that there are a lot of different Because this is all still going through the banks, all these things are being handled differently. Some cards don't need any authentication, or any two-factor authentication, some need some two-factor authentication.
Yeah, yes, so that is weird. My primary card that I have linked to my Apple ID, that was a Wells Fargo card. No issues at all. But I know people with Wells Fargo cards where they were told, no, that's not part of Apple ID yet.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, on the one hand, part of this is confusing. But, I mean, the setup process is super easy. And we'll have a link to the how-to that I did in the show notes. There is still some inconsistency. There's still things that are being worked out even amongst banks that are participating. That was my original point.
Right. But still, surprisingly simple.
Yeah, well, I'm going to hopefully do a transaction soon just so that I can be in the Cool Kids Club like you.
That would be awesome because the Cool Kids Club is kind of lonely without you.
Do you serve punch?
Punch and pie.
Punch and pie. Sweet. Sweet. All right. Well, speaking of pie, you're on Twitter, aren't you?
It's ridiculous. Oh, my God. Yes. Yes. By yes, Brian. Yes, I am.
No, what are we doing? We're doing Instagram. We were going to tell people about our Instagram accounts. Oh,
I'm on Instagram as well.
I'm going to tell people about your Instagram account because you post a lot more photos than I do. And a lot of them are really fun. And I honestly recommend that you follow Jeff on Twitter. I don't recommend following me so much, but you definitely want to follow Jeff.
That's very nice of you to say. I have photos from my California trip for NC Mug. Mm-hmm. That's why I wasn't here. I flew out to California because North Coast Mac User Group was doing their 30th anniversary event.
Right.
And so they had me speak, which was a lot of fun. But I took a couple days to go do things. And I took photos in the Redwood Forest. I took photos around Bodega Bay. And so I did all these photos, and I haven't had time to get as many online as I want. So if you're following
coming.
Yeah, so more photos from my California trip are coming soon.
Yeah, I tell you what, though, man. Do not post any more barnacled pumpkins. Those were gross.
I was totally surprised by the barnacle pumpkins.
They're like cancerous looking.
They are. They look like something burrowed inside. Like some alien creature is going to burst out at any moment.
So, you're on Instagram. What is it, JGamut?
JGamut. And while you wax poetic about my Instagram photos and say people shouldn't follow you, I disagree. I think they should follow you. But
you also like my drawings, so you know clearly your taste is suspect.
Fair enough. Nonetheless, I enjoy your photos, and I get a big kick out of the fact that you post far more cat photos than I do.
And I don't even own a cat.
And I do.
I don't even know if I've ever seen a picture of your cat. Anyway, I'm at GeekTales. That's GeekTales.
And you do have some great photos that you put up.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, it's true. So follow Brian because he will entertain you with his photos.
Indeed. Maybe. I don't know. Probably not. I don't recommend it. So, this week I did something like 10, 11 years in the making. Thereabouts, maybe 10 years. I don't know. I've had it for a long time. It sold my 20th anniversary Macintosh.
Your TAM.
My TAM. Yeah, do you remember these things? These TAMs?
I do. I remember when they came out and I coveted them, but of course couldn't afford one like most everyone else. And never did buy one. I did get to use one several times. And it it's just a beautiful design. And I thought it was so cool, and I think it still looks fantastic. Yeah, I remember the TAM, and I love it.
Now, the auction is already done, but I have a cool story behind this TAM. But first, let's bring everybody up to date on what the TAM was. It was, I think it was 1997, and it's called the 20th Anniversary Macintosh, but really it's celebrating Apple's 20th anniversary because, of course, in 1997, the Mac itself was only 13 years old. By the way,
it's
fascinating to realize that the Mac came out only 7 years after Apple was founded.
You know, it's interesting when you say that, because you're right.
Yeah.
It's like when you realize that everything the Beatles did crossed, 5 years?
63 to 69, although the last album was actually released in 70.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And yeah,
definitely the Beatles.
Yeah, you look at what they did in such a short period of time.
And then, two or three albums a year. Well, in I think it's 1967, they settled down to only two albums a year.
So apparently they got old.
And they all went number one except for Yellow Submarine, because, well, Yellow Submarine has like two good songs on it, but that's beside the point. That one went to number two. The reason why it didn't go to number one was because the White Album was still at number one.
That's right.
Yeah. So anyway, Beatles trivia aside, 1997, Apple is going to, the 20th anniversary Macintosh, and it's this Star Trekian looking thing, and it's an all-in-one, well, mostly all-in-one desktop computer, one of the first such devices. This thing looked incredible, and really, I think it was the guts of a laptop, one of Apple's early laptops.
Right, color LCD display.
Yep, color LCD display. It had this Bose subwoofer that, as much as I don't particularly care for Bose, sounds fantastic. And it was announced at $10,000, $9,999, but it shipped at $7,499, which, by the way, cost me a point in one of the Mac Brainiac events at Macworld Expo.
Oh.
Because the two at Apple IIFX, I think, was the most expensive one Apple product to ship.
Yeah, actually shipping price as opposed to announced price.
Yeah, I was really tense about that. Anyway, that's beside the point. It's a gorgeous machine. It was designed by Johnny Ive. I think, I'm not positive about this, and I haven't had time to research it. I think that it's one of the projects that caught Steve Jobs' eye, even if he didn't care for, even if the TAM is a symbol of everything that was wrong with Apple at the time, the device itself was just, it looked amazing. It still looks, that's the thing, 17 years later, it still looks amazing.
It does. I still think one would look beautiful on my desk. I don't have any place for it, but it would still look just as modern today, I think, as it did when it came out.
Yeah. So this one I got from an Apple employee. Over the years, I thought he was, I became convinced he was an engineer, but I think he was actually a designer, in that he said he worked for Johnny Ive. And this was before Johnny Ive was anywhere near as famous as he is today. But I, of course, being in this business, knew who he was. And I was very excited by that. It's like, oh my goodness, are you kidding? Because he said I bought two of them. And he said he got them from Johnny because Johnny gave them to him just to get him out of the way. And I didn't think it was very cool, but he couldn't prove it. I believed him, but he couldn't prove it, which meant that I couldn't prove it. And so, you know, it was a fun fact, but I didn't make too much of it. And I sold the second one. That was always the plan. I bought both of them with the intention of flipping the first one. Took me a few years to quote unquote flip it, but eventually I did. And, kept the other
one. You tried to sell it to me.
I did. I tried to sell it to a lot of people, and ended up Neil the noted architect Pan ended up buying it from me.
Neil has a podcast.
He does have a podcast called Apple for Architects, right?
Yeah, I think it's awesome.
It's a site, Apple for. It's a relatively new venture. Very, very cool. It's obviously in architect-oriented Apple site. So we're jamming along. And it stayed in a box all this time and eventually decided that I needed to sell it because I just moved. It's part of the hobo thing. And sure. Don't have really room for it. And it's just been in a box. It needs to be appreciated somewhere. It needs to be set up. It needs to be owned by someone who has the time and space to quite frankly, to appreciate it. And so I got it out. And I needed to take new photographs. I needed to confirm that it worked. And was doing all that and ended up opening up one of the applications, MacWrite 2, which was Apple's writing program at the time.
Good times.
And who do I see on the licensing screen but licensed to Jonathan Ive with a site license for use by Apple employees only.
That's pretty telling right there.
Yeah. And it's like, oh my goodness, I have proof that, well, you know, again, it's up to you to decide if that's actual proof. I got really excited at that point and put it up on eBay and auction closed last night. Fantastic guy from Britain bought it. And I don't know how to close that out, but it's an interesting machine. My story behind it is I think interesting, but what I think is really interesting is how this device has maintained attractiveness over the years when, you know, not even any other computer by Apple made 17 years ago looks anything close to good today.
I have to agree. Well, the original Mac design, it has an iconic look, and I really like it. It doesn't look modern.
It doesn't look pretty either. It's a fascinating device, and in the context of its time, it's absolutely amazing. But it's not pretty.
No. It's not pretty.
It's not elegant. It's not sophisticated looking.
But then you have the 20th anniversary Mac, and it still looks modern.
Yeah, and you know, I know a lot of its critics. One of the commenters on my story that I told on TMO said that this one and the Apple TV and I don't know something else he thinks are all like poster children of all the excesses of Apple in the 90s. And that's entirely true. But like this thing was $7,500 and it was delivered by concierge who would set it up for you.
That's which is pretty cool.
It's cool. It's extremely cool, but it is also incredibly decadent.
Well, and that was part of the idea with that computer.
Right. And that's why it's a poster child of everything that was wrong with Apple at the time.
Okay. Okay, I can see that.
Right, it's extraordinarily decadent. $7,500 for a computer is a lot of money, and
even today,
it was an executive's toy at the time, and I don't know. It's interesting, but it is in fact gorgeous. It is beautiful. It ended up selling on eBay for $2,125. You can pull up the auction and see that. And that, you know, of course, you could look at it that Jeepers, it's depreciated by 75%. Oh, my God. But, you know, what other computer from the dime is worth even, you know, $20?
That's true. And, okay, I've been sitting here thinking about the Apple TV or the Mac television, whatever they call that. I can't remember the exact model name.
There was the Apple TV, the one that was the all-in-one that had the TV tuner built into it.
Uh-huh, which, that, the Apple TV. That was what, the Batman Mac? Because I think that one was all black.
Or was it the Mac TV?
The Mac TV. I can't remember, but...
Now I can't remember.
But it wasn't, I don't think it was, that model was a sign or an indicator, a symbol of what was wrong with Apple at the time. I think that was a case of Apple pulling the same mistake they did with the message pad, which is they released a product well ahead of its time. Because when that computer came out, the whole thing was, who would ever want to sit at a computer and watch videos?
Right. Macintosh TV is what it was called.
Macintosh TV. Yeah.
It was, internally, it was a Performa 520 with a built-in 14-inch Sony Trinitron CRT, which was state-of-the-art at the time.
Right. And it didn't sell very well at all. It was...
No. It was very expensive, too.
Yeah, it was expensive. And then just a few years later, people are trying to get a hold of reasonable TV tuners to connect to their Macs. And then now we're at the point where, depending on your computer screen size, there's a lot of people that are using their Macintosh as their television.
Right. It was $2,097 in 1993.
That was pretty expensive.
That was pretty expensive, but the wasn't that expensive, actually. I mean, yeah, it was expensive, but there were certainly more expensive TVs. Well, you know, what's really funny about it is that it looks like a Performa with the TV grafted on top. Of course, that's what it was.
That's what it was, yeah. They used an existing Performa shell, painted it black, and then popped all the guts for this system inside.
You want to? Should we stick the Wikipedia link in the show notes?
Of course.
I will shoot that to you right now. It's yeah, and it does not look pretty today.
Oh,
again, no. Kind of going back to that you know, just the I don't know. I think the TAM is gorgeous. That's all I'm saying.
I agree. And I think it's a testament to Johnny Ive's design skills and, mm-hmm. and his sense for design.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how many of his other computer designs we'll be able to talk about 20 years or whatever after they've been released.
The iMac, the original iMac for sure.
Yes, but it will look dated.
You know, the iMac will look dated, but I think that it's held up. I think that it's held up better than the original Mac, certainly.
Sure,
it still has an elegance to it. Yeah, it looks dated, and to be sure, the TAM looks dated in some ways, also for sure, but. It still, the thing about it is that it still looks sophisticated. That's the thing about the TAM.
Yes.
And and I think to a certain extent that's even true for the, you know, original Bondi Blue iMac.
Yeah, I'm thinking the aluminum MacBook Pro design.
Yes, the MacBook Air. And
the MacBook Air.
I think that the current Mac Pro is something that is still going to look amazing 20, 30 years from now.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And that's actually really cool to know that Johnny Ive has been able to come up with multiple designs that have a high likelihood of it being able to stand the test of time.
And I have one until I ship it off today that was likely even owned by Johnny. It's pretty cool, huh?
That's really cool.
It's really cool. It's a shame to sell it. But the pins. Did you see the photographs of the pins? I can't get over the pins. The pins. No one has the pins. No one sells them. The pins should have sold for $2,000.
Well, basically what you did was you sold a set of pins for $2,000 and threw in a TAM for free.
There's a photograph in the story, a close-up of the pins where you can see the gold leaf printing on there with the Apple logo and 20th anniversary Macintosh. They're still sealed in plastic. I should have kept this thing.
And where were you going to store it?
Seller's remorse. At least the guy that bought it is super awesome and super cool, and he's a composer.
Yeah, so, it's going to a good home.
It's going to you a did very, the right thing, very good Brian. Home. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Good for you.
All right. Speaking of,
your TAM is going to a better place.
That's right. Actually, it's probably true. It's going to a manor. Anyway, all right. iPad.
Yeah.
iPad. Today, the you got sent on an interesting path, and I thought it was definitely something worth talking about. So obviously, Apple announced the iPad 2. You know, it's super fast. It's got this new processor. It's got amazing graphics. It's a dynamo. And earlier today, Pixelmator for iPad hit the Apple Store, and you kind of went off on a tangent that I thought was pretty cool.
All right, so here's where I went with this. So Pixel.
Well, tell us what Pixelmator is. Yeah,
that's what I was about to do.
Okay,
so for those of you that don't know, Pixelmator is a image editing app in the vein of Photoshop. And it costs a lot less than Photoshop.
What doesn't, besides my TAM?
Yeah, besides your TAM? Well, yeah.
There aren't that many things that cost more than Photoshop, but anyway, please, go ahead.
Yeah, anyhow.
Most of the things in for sale in the world cost less than Photoshop.
I think you're right. Actually, I think you're right. Okay, so Pixelmator, it's been available for the Mac for quite a while, and it's a very affordable, very powerful image editing and image design application. And as a matter of fact, on my MacBook Air, that's what I use in lieu of Photoshop. So that should tell you just how capable this app is, because I use Photoshop every single day. So it's now available for the iPad, which in and of itself was like a big surprise to me, because this is a very sophisticated, very powerful program, much like Photoshop is. And they figured out a way to make it into an iPad app. So when I really started to think about this, I was like, okay, so there are all these different things that I do on my iPad, but the place where it falls down as my laptop replacement is image editing. And that's even with Adobe's Photoshop Touch for the iPad, which is really cool. So this app comes out, and now I'm wondering, have we hit the point finally where for people that are like serious content creators, where an iPad is now a viable alternative for a laptop?
Well, have you installed Pixelmator on the iPad?
I haven't had time yet, because we've been busy writing and recording.
It's true. There's so many different aspects of this. So first of all, there's like, is Pixelmator coming out for iPad? See, the problem is that we haven't really tested it yet, but if it works, that is really bad news for Adobe.
Yeah, because if it does work, and based on the demos that we saw last week during the iPad Air 2 introduction,
mm-hmm.
I got very excited. And what I saw was what appeared to me to truly be an alternative to Photoshop for the iPad.
Yeah. And you know, the what Adobe doesn't need is for a program to gain a foothold as a Photoshop replacement on the iPad. That is going to be bad for Adobe's bottom line.
I agree.
Which I'm okay with, because, you know, as much as I use Photoshop and love Photoshop, and Adobe makes very questionable decisions about its products it seems like on a daily basis.
Yeah, I shake my head and wonder at times.
I'm a heavy Adobe user. So I mean, you know, there's a lot of baggage with that statement.
Yeah. Yes, there is, and I totally understand. I use Adobe products daily, and I'm glad to have them. And
yes, oh man, yeah, I'm very glad. Photoshop is amazing.
Oh yeah, and while I do get frustrated at times, I am really glad that Adobe is making these products. But I also really like the idea of some serious competition, And I think that while serious competition on the desktop is not a reality for Adobe today, on the iPad, that's totally an option. And I think Pixelmator is potentially in a position to be the that serious competition. But
doesn't Pixelmator need to be able to be serious competition for Photoshop on the desktop before it can be a true long-term serious competitor for Photoshop on the iPad?
Not really. I don't think so, because it's compatible with Photoshop files. And
yeah, but Pixelmator on the iPad needs to be able to do the same kinds of things you would do with Adobe on a desktop to make the iPad a true computer replacement for people who do serious image editing.
And based on the feature set that Pixelmator is touting, it's very likely they have done that.
Okay, well then, is it a different feature set than what's on the desktop version of Pixelmator?
To a degree, but it would be more like a subset.
Pixelmator on the
Mac is a very capable program. The reason I don't see it as a really serious competitor to Photoshop is because on the desktop, you're buying the Creative Cloud subscription, which means you just get everything anyhow, so you're going to have Photoshop. And there are so many people that are so deeply entrenched into Photoshop on the desktop that switching to an application like Pixelmator for them does not make sense. For people that don't need to have the full-on Adobe experience, they can jump into Pixelmator and use it, and it's great, and they never will have a need to get into Photoshop. On the iPad, because it's a different way of using your system anyhow, and people have not had what I would consider to be a true alternative to Photoshop on the iPad yet, even from Adobe, this is a place where Pixelmator can be the reigning king if they play their cards right. And I can see where there's a lot of people that are heavy Photoshop users on the Mac that would use Pixelmator as their photo and image editing app on the iPad, and then send everything back to Photoshop on their Mac later on. And I think I fall in that category, and we're going to see if I'm right.
We will, in fact, see if you're right. I may just be arguing semantics, but it is, whether or not Pixelmator is a true competitor to Photoshop on the desktop is irrespective of whether or not there are people who need it. It's not actually the same question.
And yep, you're right. That's not the same question.
And so if Pixelmator on the iPad is a Photoshop, it allows, if it's a Photoshop competitor, that it would allow someone to have their iPad be a computer replacement, then that should also mean that Pixelmator on the desktop is a true Photoshop competitor replacement. If not, then not.
I think that they can be mutually exclusive, and that's because of the desktop market. And I think that the desktop market is different than the tablet market as far as users go, and there's a lot of overlap. And it's that overlap that allows Pixelmator to be the competitor, the dominant player on the iPad, while Photoshop remains the dominant player on the Mac.
No. Photoshop is going to remain the dominant player.
Sure.
On the Mac. But they're going to, if Adobe doesn't get their act together and release a real Photoshop version on the iPad that actually does stuff, that does the things that pros need in particular, they are going to be facing the possibility of losing share on the desktop because of Pixelmator's success on the iPad. because if Pixelmator is able to have success on the iPad, some of that success will translate into the desktop market for the company.
Sure, and especially because it supports handoff. So if you're running Yosemite and you have Pixelmator on your Mac, you can have your graphics that you're working on go seamlessly back and forth between your Mac and your iPad.
Yeah, which is very cool.
It's very cool, and I'm really looking forward to trying that out. Yeah.
Indeed.
And having done a review of Photoshop Touch for the iPad, I'm really interested in seeing how Pixelmator for the iPad stacks up.
For sure.
And if it handles for me the way it ought to based on the specs and the feature set that they list, this does not look good for Adobe as far as Photoshop Touch features.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that too.
I want Adobe's feet held to the fire. You know, I'm not going to start bagging on Adobe again. I want their feet held to the fire though. And, I want the company to have to feel like it's competing for our dollars. And I don't think that Adobe has felt that way for a long time.
I think that's a fair assessment. They haven't been in a position where they have needed to truly fight for our dollars because they have been the only name.
Mm-hmm. Hey, one last little mini topic before we call the show. What do you think of Yosemite so far?
I'm liking it. Here's how brave I was. After playing with the betas on my MacBook Air, I installed Yosemite as soon as I could get it to download and made sure that I had all the updates installed on my Air, closed the lid, and packed my computer away before taking off for California. So I had enough faith in the way it was performing as a beta that I felt totally fine doing that.
Sure.
And so all the writing that I did, our coverage during Apple's earnings report on Monday, I did that from my Yosemite machine without worrying at all. And other than a weird problem where I'm dragging content with file or folder into an open folder window, I get a Finder crash. It's been running great for me. And I know that the problem I'm having is pretty isolated. So I don't know what the issue is. So I'll figure that out and before I decide if I need to bag on Apple for it. But I'm really liking it so far.
I am too. I think it looks gorgeous.
The interface itself has taken a little getting used to. What I found made it much more pleasurable for me, and I do like how it looks. I switched to the dark mode, which actually I did that during the beta, and that made a huge difference for me. And then I shut off the translucency.
No, I have been okay. I took a shining to the interface immediately. I switched to dark mode just to see it and switched back. And I love the way it looks. I'm pretty pleased.
I'm pleased too. I really am.
All right, just taking your pulse, taking your temperature, your Yosemite temperature.
And I'd say my Yosemite temperature is pretty darn warm.
That's good to know, sir.
And it sounds like yours is too.
Yes, it is. It is indeed. All right. Well, I think we have a show, man.
I think we do.
And I've got stuff to move still from the old house.
And apparently,
hobos.
I have more stuff that I'm supposed to be doing too. So I guess we should wrap it up.
We both have been moving. So fantastic. Yay. Yay. Yes.
Go us. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening. And that's where you talk now.
Yes. We got to change the script to some point. Oops, sorry, sausage making. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.